Shalom, welcome to Ash JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai Pesach Ben Dov Meir Ben Yecheskel and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, imagine what would have happened in regard to Iran's nuclear bomb-making program if JTF had a multi-million dollar budget. If for the past several years JTF had a multi-million dollar budget, imagine how different the situation would be today. Right now, we have a catastrophic agreement with Iran legitimizing their nuclear bomb-making program, allowing them to continue to enrich uranium, allowing them to continue their nuclear activities, and even rolling back many of the sanctions against them, which is the beginning of eventually taking apart the whole sanctions program, God forbid. But imagine what would have happened if JTF had the multi-million dollar budget that we pleaded with people to get us, to get for us. And I'm certainly not accusing my fellow JTFers. I know that my fellow JTFers don't have that type of money, so it's not your fault that we don't have that type of money. But if we had somehow been able to raise millions of dollars every year, we would have reached the entire people of Israel with our message, because Israel's a small country, and with you give me a multi-million dollar budget, I will reach the whole people of Israel with our message. And we would reach them on a regular basis. Every week they'd be exposed to us and our message. And it would lead to a growing movement in Israel. We would have a growing movement that would be bigger and bigger and more powerful. And that would put tremendous pressure on Bibi Netanyahu and on all the Israeli leaders to take action on Iran. We would bring facts and information and truth to the people of Israel about how dangerous Iran is, about how much of a nuclear threat of a Holocaust this really does represent, and about how capable Israel is militarily of dealing with this situation, about how a nuclear Iran is 1,000 times worse than any possible reaction of Barack Hussein Obama being mad, or the United States getting angry, or the State Department condemning, or the UN. A nuclear Iran is 1,000 times worse than all the condemnations and all the other scenarios that pathetic, ghetto-minded, wimpy, spineless, self-hating Jews like Netanyahu can imagine. Because Netanyahu's not doing this for one simple reason, because he knows that Obama doesn't want him to do it, and he wants to be a good little servant of Obama and of John Kerry and of the United States and of the European Union. He doesn't want to go against them. And so he's endangering the survival of millions of Jews so as not to annoy Obama and the European Union and the State Department and the UN. If we had a multi-million dollar budget, I can assure you, we would convince the majority of Israeli Jews that that is insanity. It is insanity to expose the Jewish people to the danger of another Holocaust because it might offend Obama, our enemy, and he is our enemy. This is insanity. And we would convince the majority of the people of Israel that that is true if we could reach them with our message every week. And if we had a multi-million dollar budget, that would have happened. The pressure on Netanyahu to act would have been overwhelming. The people of Israel would have said, you're going to be remembered forever in history as the worst Jewish leader in 1,000 years if you don't act and protect us from this nuclear danger right now. That would have created an overwhelming pressure on him. He would have had tremendous political pressure because our movement would be growing and we'd become a growing threat to him politically. We would say, Netanyahu and the Likud are not willing to protect the people of Israel. We are. Give us the chance to do it because we will protect the people of Israel. That would have created tremendous political pressure on him to act, to prove, no, I will also protect the people of Israel. You don't have to support this extreme right-wing movement. I will also protect the people of Israel. And by the way, we're not extreme right-wingers, but that's what Netanyahu would call us. In the end, Netanyahu would have acted. That Iranian nuclear bomb-making program would have been destroyed already by now. In fact, it would have been destroyed last year during the presidential election, which was the perfect opportunity. During the presidential election, I don't even think Obama would have condemned Israel. I think Obama would have been afraid even to condemn Israel if Israel had done this during the presidential election last year. But Netanyahu never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. That's something that's true of all the Judenrat, Kapo, self-hating leaders of the Jewish people in modern history. They never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And so, the whole world would be a different place if only we could have been out there exposing the truth, pressuring the leaders, telling people with our common sense and factual message what really is at stake here. Something that they never hear from the evil anti-Semitic Israeli news media. Something that they never hear from their evil, corrupt politicians. Something that they never learn in the evil, traitorous educational system in Israel. We would become the new educational system. We would give the people of Israel an education and an awakening that would forever change Jewish history and world history. All of that is what could have been if only we had had the multi-million dollar budget that we so desperately wanted. But we didn't achieve it. It says in the Talmud, it is a pity that that which was you cannot change. We can't go back in time. That's one thing we can never do, is go back in time and change the past. The only thing we can do is try to correct the future. Israel still should go in militarily and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Let's hope that Hashem, in his mercy, somehow miraculously pushes Israel to do this, pushes these self-hating, wimpy, pathetic Jewish leaders to finally act like leaders for a change. In the meantime, we're not allowed to just depend on miracles. Of course, we have to pray to God. We have to ask for miracles. We have to try our best. But we still have to do everything in our own power to change things. Aside from praying and aside from asking God to help us, we have to do everything in our own power. Because in Judaism, there are two things that you have to do. Everybody has to have two legs to walk. One leg is prayer and turning to God and asking God to help us. The other leg is doing everything in our own natural power to change things. Everything we can do, everything that we can possibly do, no matter how difficult it seems. Anyone who doesn't pray and who just does everything in their own, that is within their own ability, is like a one-legged person, is like a cripple. On the other hand, anyone who just prays, who prays to God all the time but never does anything else, never tries to actually effectuate change through natural means, is also like a one-legged cripple. We need both legs to walk. We need to both pray to God and believe in God, and we need to do everything within our own natural power to make a difference. That's another message we would bring to the people of Israel every week if we had had the budget that we need. Maybe there'll be a miracle, and sometime in the future, we'll get that budget. I hope it happens in our lifetime. I'm sure it will happen eventually, but I hope it happens in our lifetime, and I hope it happens soon enough to prevent catastrophe for Israel. Because this Iranian nuclear bomb-making agreement with Barack Hussein Obama and the Europeans, this is a catastrophe. Make no mistake about it, it is a disaster. It is basically saying to the Iranians, we're going to trust you. We're going to let you go all the way, develop and enrich uranium and go all the way toward building a nuclear bomb. And then we're going to trust you not to actually do it once you reach that capacity. That is the most insane possible policy that can ever be pursued. And Netanyahu and the Israeli leaders are condemning this agreement because they know that this is something that endangers Israel's very survival at this point. But all their condemnations and all their press conferences and all their speeches are a joke compared to what should be done. What should be done, the only thing that should have been done from the beginning, is to militarily destroy this program. That's the answer that always was. JTFers who have followed us over the years know that we were right on this issue. For over 20 years, we've been right. We were the only ones that were right on this issue for 20 years. Consistently. No one has consistently given you this message the way we have for over 20 years. No one. And you know that if we could reach everybody with this message, you know it would have made a big difference. It would have made a tremendous difference. And so, we have to try with whatever we do have, with our limited budget. We still have to try, and we have to fight the good fight and hope that if God sees us fighting this fight, maybe God will have mercy on the Jewish people and on Israel. Maybe he'll have mercy because he sees at least some people are trying their best to do what's right. We are not allowed to be silent. We have to fight. We have to reach as many people as we can and do whatever we can and hope for the best and hope we can make a difference. That's why we urge you to help us. You know that it certainly won't hurt if we reach people with the truth. And it can only help. It can only help. How much can it help? Can it help enough to make a difference? That I don't know. But it can only help. The more people we reach, the better it is, the more helpful it is. The more people we wake up, the better it is, the more helpful it is. The better a world we are creating. That's our mission. That's our calling in life. And that's what the Jews and righteous Gentiles of JTF set out to do. And so, once again, if you truly love Israel and the Jewish people, and if you truly understand what an unbelievable threat it is to give these Muslim maniacs in Iran nuclear bombs, and to set off a nuclear arms race among all the Muslim terrorist countries, you know, Saudi Arabia now is saying that they're going to get nuclear bombs. They said it openly now. I mean, the nuclear arms race is already starting, God forbid, because of this. If you truly understand what an incredible threat this is, and if you really love Israel and love the Jewish people and believe in God's commandments and believe in the Bible and believe in justice and believe in sanity, then you have to help us. You have to help us and participate and increase your participation. We all have to do everything we can to make a difference. And the things you can help us with, once again, some of the things you can help us with include when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, like we do 3 times a week. We have 3 Hebrew videos a week. We have 3 English videos a week. When you see us put these videos up on the forum, help us promote them on YouTube and on Facebook. Like, favorite, comment, share, and mirror the videos. Do everything you can to promote these videos. Make people aware of the fact that we have these videos. That's very important. And help us with our forums and our Facebook pages with good threads and posts and subjects so that people will want to be involved and will want to participate with us. Remember, everything you write on our forum is automatically on Google, is automatically on the search engines. Just as all of our videos are on the search engines. So, it's important. The more you participate and the higher quality of your participation, you never know. You never know what it can lead to. You never know who you can be persuading to join with us. And finally, of course, as we always say the obvious, which is that every check and money order and cash donation makes a difference. Obviously, the bigger a budget we have, the more people we can reach, the more effective we are, obviously. And so, we urge people, of course, to help us, as there are great JTFers who do help us. God bless them, sending checks and money orders and cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box. We need your help now more than ever. And if people prefer to donate online with their credit card because it's more convenient, you can just go to the donate button on our English main page and on our Hebrew main page. On top, there's a donate button. Now's the time to make a difference. We've been proven right over and over again. But we don't want to be proven right. We want to make the situation right. We want to change the world for the better. We want to reach enough people to make this a better world. And we can only do that if everybody pitches in and helps. I don't know how much of a difference your help will make if you decide to devote time or give us money or help in some other way. I don't know how much it's going to help. You know we're going to try the best we can. You know we're going to throw everything we've got into this and do the best we can to make a difference. How much will this help in the end? I don't know. We're going to try. But I do know that we're obligated to do everything we can to try. That's for sure. And it's never a waste to try your best in order to effectuate justice and in order to fight for truth and righteousness. That's never a waste. Because even if you seemingly fail, God doesn't forget. You never know in future years, even future generations, what your having done something will lead to. For instance, some people say, oh, I prayed 1,000 times for something and it never came true. That doesn't mean your 1,000 prayers were a waste. They were not a waste. They didn't go to waste. God heard every one of those prayers. And you never know. You never know when something good will happen because of the merit that you got for saying those prayers. It is not a waste to do good things. It is not a waste to try and seemingly fail. It's not a waste to be an idealist. If everyone was an idealist, what a wonderful world this would be. It would be like the Garden of Eden if everybody was an idealist. And so when we act with idealism and love and a conscience and a commitment to truth and justice and righteousness, that certainly is not a waste. There's no higher purpose for our existence than to devote ourselves to correcting the world and doing what has to be done and fighting for what God wants us to fight for. And many times we see the success, we see the fruits of our success very quickly. Also, that happens also in some cases. Like we did in the Kahanas movement with Soviet Jewry. Or like the Irgun and the Stern Group and other freedom fighters saw when we saw the recreation of the State of Israel 65 years ago. For the first time in 2,000 years, the Jewish people have a Jewish state again in fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Do you know how many times people fought over the years and tried to create a Jewish state before then, and how many aliyahs there were and how many seeming failures there were? None of it was a waste. All of it paved the road for the eventual success. And every time our videos touch the hearts of Israeli Jewish kids, because most of our viewers are kids, of a new generation that are the future of Israel, every time we touch their hearts and bring them a Torah true message and bring them an uncompromising message of idealism and ideology and commitment to truth, every time we do that, we're paving the road for success sometime in the future. Maybe now even, but if not now, then at some time in the future. So, help us, join with us. This latest horrible agreement with Iran just proves what we've been saying all along, and just proves how essential it is that we wake people up as quickly as possible before it's too late. Okay, now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, why is breast cancer less common in Japan, China, and other Asian countries? Unquote. I don't know the answer to that. I honestly don't know. In China and some Asian countries, actually life expectancy is not that high. Because in some of those countries, like in China, there's a lot of people smoke. So actually their life expectancy is not that high in those countries. In Japan, life expectancy is very high. Because in Japan, they have healthy diets and they live relatively healthy lives in Japan. But why in general Asian women are less likely to have breast cancer, I don't know. I do believe that, you know, I believe in certain basic things if you want to try to correct health, if you want to try to have a healthy body. I think one of them is, of course, a healthy diet. People should only eat healthy food. People should eat healthy food and have a healthy diet. And some of the things Japanese eat, for instance, fish is very, very healthy, as long as it's not fried. Fish happens to be very healthy. Some of the things they eat are healthy. They also have They also do put greens and vegetables in a lot of their food, and vegetables are extraordinarily healthy. But not just in terms of cancer, in terms of heart disease, in terms of all types of diseases, and in terms of longevity and health in general. Eating well is number one. Number two, exercise. Exercise is very important. And number three, not aggravating yourself. If you get very aggravated, it raises your blood pressure and it does all types of terrible things. Now, of course, we have a lot of aggravating news that comes up. You've got to learn how to take the news, and not that you calmly take the news and ignore it and pretend it isn't there. You deal with the news, you deal with it, you do everything in your power to try to change things for the better. But you do that in a cool-headed way without getting all aggravated and agitated and letting your blood pressure go up. So you got to learn how to roll with the punches, as Rabbi Kahana used to say to me. He used to say, Chaim, you got to learn how to roll with the punches. You got to learn how to be calm and relaxed and cool under fire. And you got to learn to eat well, and you got to learn to sleep well, and you got to learn to exercise. If you do those things, I believe that that's the secret to better health as much as we can possibly influence things. Of course, there are genetic factors and other factors sometimes that are beyond our control. But what we can control, we should try to control with good diet, good exercise, and good habits. And now Wandering Samurai writes, and I quote, also as an unrelated matter, tomorrow is the birthday of a special friend of mine. His name is Juan Martinez. He turns 56 tomorrow, unquote. Well, if he's a good friend of yours, if he's a special friend of yours, Wandering Samurai, I'm sure he's a good person. And so we wish him all the best. We wish Juan Martinez many other happy birthdays, and he should live a long and healthy life. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to the great Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, since Thanksgiving is next week, what is your favorite American non-Jewish holiday? Thanks, unquote. Oh, the 4th of July. The 4th of July. Not because of fireworks or anything like that. That isn't the issue. And of course, I can't go to 4th of July. I can't eat at 4th of July parties because the food isn't kosher. But the 4th of July, the concept of the 4th of July, 13 colonies, heavily outnumbered, fighting against the British Empire, fighting against many traitors who were loyalists to the British and who worked against American independence. And this ragtag army that George Washington and other American heroes put together defeated the British Empire. I think that is symbolized by July 4th and by the desire for a just and free nation. That's what July 4th symbolizes, and therefore I think that that's the most special American holiday, the most special American non-Jewish holiday. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And now we go to our great friend Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, Obama won in large part on the abortion issue. America has long been somewhat pro-butchering, but in the past 5 years it's become fanatically so, unquote. Actually, Lewinsky Stinks, the rate of abortion has gone down in the past few years, if you check the statistics. I think I'm correct in saying that the number of abortions have actually gone down. I do not believe that this is an issue that we can't win on. I think we can have pro-life people elected nationally. Now, if you're talking about my home state of New York, which is an insane left-wing Sodom and Gomorrah piece of garbage state, if you talk about that, that's a different story. In my home state of New York, it's almost impossible for someone who's pro-life to get elected to anything. Very, very hard. Especially statewide. But nationally, I do think we can elect pro-life. I think we can have a pro-life president. I think it is possible. And I'm hoping, and you know that we're going to be supporting Ted Cruz, and I'm hoping that he'll get elected, and he is fervently pro-life, uncompromisingly pro-life. We'll see. I'm hoping it can happen. Because abortion is a terrible sin. It's a crime, it's a sin, it's a terrible tragedy, and it's something that we have to That's another thing that we have to educate people about, how terrible this is, what a terrible tragedy this is. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go on to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, Allah is a stone idol from the Middle East. It was one of the gods of the Kaaba. Does this not count as idolatry, unquote? Well, in pre-Islamic times, the Arabs did indeed worship idols, and they did believe in gods that undoubtedly constitute idolatry. But Islam as a religion states very clearly over and over again that there's just one God. Allah is the name that they give to this one God. But they state over and over again that there's only one God in the universe, and that you're not allowed to believe in anything else other than this one God. And so that's monotheistic. Paper cut, you can have people believing in one God and still being unbelievably, hopelessly evil. But you can, the Muslims are proof of the fact that you can have monotheists who are murderous, violent, Nazi-like beasts who murder their own people, who turn all of their own, who turn all of their women into slaves and treat their own women worse than cattle, who butcher their own children, the cruelest, most vicious, most vile people in the world. And nevertheless, they will swear to you that they are the strictest monotheists that you can get. I mean, they are so strict about monotheism. Now, it's true that there are aspects of Islam that have their origins in idolatry. And so you could say that there are idolatrous origins to the religion, like the Kaaba, like the Kaaba. The Kaaba is the stone they all dance around. But Allah is the name they give to the God of the universe. That's the name they give to the God of the universe. And, you know, again, I know that there are many people who want to make Islam into an idolatrous religion. There are aspects of the way modern Muslims worship that are idolatrous. There are some certain things they do that you can regard as idolatrous. And again, Muhammad, adopted monotheism basically because he was imitating the Jews and copying the Jews in Mecca and Medina. He met the Jews and he was impressed with the fact that they were monotheists, even though he hated them and wanted to kill them. He nevertheless was impressed with that aspect of the Jewish religion. However, this is what Satanic Verses is all about, the controversy over Satanic Verses, where he himself was willing to be a polytheist and was willing to worship other gods and was willing to do all types of things that are not monotheistic. But the final word that was put into the Quran is a monotheistic message. The message that there's only one God, there's no one else other than that one God. They're using the name Allah for this God. So you could say they're giving him a name that that shouldn't be his real name. Maybe you could say that. But if you believe in one God, in just one God, and no one else as the ruler of the universe, that's not idolatry. And that's what Islam, if you read the Quran, claims to believe in. They also believe in mass murder. They also believe in terrorism. They also believe in every barbaric thing under the sun. So again, the fact that they're preaching, or claiming to preach at least, a monotheistic religion, that certainly doesn't make them righteous and doesn't absolve them of all the other crimes that they commit. And it proves that you can be monotheistic and be evil. It's possible. It is possible. But again, if you want to insist that Islam is idolatrous, if you want to do that, you can do that if you want. But having read the Quran and studied Islam, I don't believe the message of the Quran is an idolatrous message. I believe it's a murderous message. It's an intolerant message. It's an anti-Semitic message. It's an anti-Christian message. It's vicious and cruel in every respect. But the one thing they do not tolerate in Islam is worshipping other gods, other than the one God of the universe. And they happen to use the name Allah for that one God. Thank you, Paper Cut. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, why was the economy better off under Bill Clinton than now under Barack Hussein Obama, unquote? Great question. First of all, because Ronald Reagan was president for 8 years and created the greatest economic growth, expansion, and healthy economic circumstances that this country has ever seen. Reagan put into place tax cuts and tax relief. He slowed the growth of government spending, and that unleashed a huge period of growth, huge, unprecedented period of growth in the 1980s. Then George Bush Sr. came into office for 4 years and unfortunately instituted the biggest tax increase in American history until that time. Later, Bill Clinton wound up giving us an even bigger tax increase, but he increased taxes, Bush, and did various other things, so there was a recession. But under Bill Clinton, what happened was the first year he was in office, he instituted a tax increase, which was terrible. And then after that, we had the internet. The internet created an economic boom in this country. It created a whole new world. I mean, just imagine a world today without the internet. Imagine if we don't have the internet. Imagine how different the world would be. That was what it was like. In the 90s, the internet first came into being in the early 90s, the early to mid 90s. So Bill Clinton, when he was president, was lucky to be president at a time when we had an invention, a technological advance that so improved things, that so advanced the world, that the effect on the economy was just absolutely gigantic. It was unbelievable. It was one of the biggest boosts maybe in history to any economy of any country. In addition to that, Bill Clinton did make compromises with the Republican Congress. He was willing to make compromises, and they got a balanced budget because of that. Now, I want to note something very important, though. Every compromise Bill Clinton made with the Republican Congress, Hillary Clinton was opposed to. She was opposed to him signing the welfare reform law. She was opposed to the balanced budget. She was opposed to all of these compromises that Bill Clinton made with Newt Gingrich and with the Republicans in Congress in the 1990s. So if Hillary Clinton had been president, God forbid, we wouldn't have had that situation. It would have been a different situation. Bill Clinton is just a political prostitute. He has no ideology. He just does whatever's popular, whatever the polls say, whatever's popular. That's Bill Clinton. He's evil. He's immoral. And his policies on Israel were terrible. On foreign policy were terrible. We had nuclearized Pakistan, nuclearized North Korea under Bill Clinton. Terrible policies. But economically, he was willing with the budget. He was willing to compromise with Republicans in Congress. Hillary Clinton does not believe in that. No matter what she says now, she was against it. And she will be an ideologue, a left-wing ideologue like Obama. But Clinton had a lot of good luck when he was president. The beginning of the internet was a tremendous boost for the economy. And a Republican Congress, Republican Senate, Republican House that he had to compromise with to get budgets passed. That was really what did it. That's what did it. But even that was a temporary bubble, as we saw eventually, a bubble that eventually burst when George Bush became president, because his policies were based upon giving people houses that they couldn't afford. Clinton pushed that more aggressively than any other president. He gave people houses that they could not afford. He gave unemployed people, criminals, everybody, houses that they absolutely, there was no way they could repay them. And he was pushing the banks to give out these loans. And that eventually created economic disaster. That really reached its peak during the Clinton years. But temporarily, it made the economy look like it was booming when it was happening, temporarily. So, in the long term, Clinton's economic policies were terrible. In the short term, he had a lot of good luck and a lot of things that happened that just happened to happen when he was president. And so that's why things seem to work out better for him than for Obama. But if you put the Clintons back in the White House now, I believe that their policies would be just as disastrous as Obama's policies. Thank you very much, Da Vinci. And now we go to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, I am surprised at you. How can you forget the name of that evil, the worst, if not one of the worst, self-hating Jews, my mayor, Rahm Emanuel? Unquote. You're absolutely right, Chicago Jew. I don't know why I had a mental block, maybe because I just can't stand even thinking about this vile individual. But for some reason, I had a mental block. You're right. I was naming the self-hating Obama Jews, and I mentioned David Axelrod, and for some reason, I just forgot the evil mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. You're so right, Chicago Jew. Absolutely right. I should never... I don't know. I hope the day comes when everybody can forget his evil name. But it's amazing that I had that mental block. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Benjamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, I think JFK was the lesser of the evils out of all the Democrat post-World War II presidents. Unquote. All right, let's start with that. I don't know why you say that. What did he do that was made him the lesser of the evils? He pushed for the so-called civil rights laws that ended up destroying America. It's true the civil rights laws didn't pass until he was assassinated. Because of his assassination, people felt terrible over his assassination, so Lyndon Johnson was able to pass those laws when Lyndon Johnson succeeded him. But he was pushing for all the things that ended up destroying America. He started America in the no-win situation in the Vietnam War. He's the one who started getting America involved in Vietnam. And he was going to pursue the same type of policy as Johnson, which was a no-win policy. America could have won in Vietnam, but the Kennedy-Johnson policy was a no-win policy. They just wanted to defend South Vietnam without invading and liberating North Vietnam, which would have ended the war immediately. So I think on Vietnam he was terrible. And I think on the economy... was just very strong in the 60s. He did reduce taxes. Now, JFK, one thing he did do, he reduced taxes. He believed in tax reduction. And he initiated a tax decrease in 1963, I think it was, that did boost the economy. That is true. That happens to be true. But on foreign policy, look at his policy in Cuba. He let the Soviets maintain their bases in Cuba. He said they have to get their nuclear missiles out of there, but once they got the nuclear missiles out, he should have invaded Cuba, liberated Cuba. He should have sent in the Marines, liberated Cuba, and said, we're not going to allow a threat like this 90 miles off of our shore, off the shore of Florida. He should have sent in the Marines and liberated Cuba, which the United States could easily have done. Instead, they allowed the Soviets to continue to have that communist base in Cuba. I didn't think that was a victory. I thought that was a defeat for the United States, the Cuban Missile Crisis. And again, Vietnam, I thought he was bad. Civil rights laws, he was terrible. He pushed that civil rights agenda that ended up destroying America. And remember, Benjamin Yisrael, that it was his brother, Teddy Kennedy, who in 1965 sponsored and got passed in the Congress the new immigration laws that led to the third world invasion of the United States. America's downfall really came as a result of the civil rights laws and the immigration laws. In the 1960s, we started welcoming third world immigrants from third world hellholes all over, and that was the beginning of the end of the United States. And those were policies that were very closely connected to the Kennedys. Now you ask, what was his policy on Israel, unquote. Well, when Kennedy was president, Israel was in the pre-1967 borders that were only 6 to 9 miles wide, so what could he do? What could he pressure Israel to do Israel was already in the pre-67 borders. There was nothing they could do to pressure Israel. And remember, he was president, he became president only 15 or 16 years after the end of the Holocaust, so there was still tremendous guilt over the Holocaust in this country. People felt guilty and felt terrible about what happened in the Holocaust still. And the Arabs were openly saying, we're going to perpetrate another Holocaust, we're going to push the Jews into the sea. So that was a period where the nation and Western public opinion was very pro-Israel because of that. So there wasn't much he could do in terms of Israel. There wasn't really any, his policy, there was nothing really to do in terms of Israel. Now you ask, was RFK, which is Robert F. Kennedy, pro-Israel? Robert F. Kennedy being John F. Kennedy's brother, who was the attorney general, who was a senator from New York and was eventually assassinated. No, of course not. None of the Kennedys were pro-Israel. The Kennedy family are anti-Semites. Their father was a Nazi. He was pro-Hitler. He was the ambassador, United States ambassador to England during the, in the 30s. He was pro-Hitler. Their father was a Nazi. The family are anti-Semites. Of course not. And now Binyamin writes, a Jordanian PLO terrorist from Yesha, before they started calling themselves Palestinians, quote-unquote, was the Muslim terrorist that assassinated him. That's true. Sirhan Sirhan assassinated him. Because it was a stupid Arab. It was the dumbest thing he could do. The Kennedys were not pro-Israel in any way. They were a disaster for Israel and the Jewish people. So, you know, Sirhan Sirhan was an idiot. Of course, in the 1960s, everybody was saying they were pro-Israel. Everybody claimed to be pro-Israel in those days. So Kennedy made some speech saying that he's pro-Israel. Big deal. Claiming he's pro-Israel. It was all a lie. And because of that, Sirhan Sirhan assassinated him. Under orders from Yasser Arafat, by the way. Oh, but that doesn't mean he's pro-Israel. Of course not. Of course not. The Kennedys were terrible, had a terrible effect on this country and on the world. Terrible. Thank you, Binyamin. And Binyamin, I lived through it. I remember them. I was a kid, but I remember them. I lived through what they... I saw the effects of what they did. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, who writes, and I quote, one, what should be done to the beasts that play knock out the Jew, unquote. Well, if the country was a normal country and people were allowed to defend themselves, they should be shot to death. Somebody comes up to you and physically starts attacking you, you have a right to defend yourself. I mean, these beasts should be killed. If someone comes up to you, and I think it's a danger to your life, a mob is coming up to you, a mob is coming up and attacking you, you never know, it could lead to death. So I think people should have a right to take out a gun and start shooting these people. I think that's what should be done. Now you ask what should be done. Now, realistically, if somebody does that, are they going to get into trouble with the law? Of course they are. That's the crazy country we live in, the crazy society that we live in today. People should learn to defend themselves. People should learn martial arts. They should learn boxing. They should learn to defend themselves. Jews should learn to defend themselves, especially Jews. White people in general should learn to defend themselves, and especially Jews should learn to defend themselves. They should also have guns. Of course, in New York City, we're not allowed to have guns. Because we live in a Bolshevik city. But in places where you're allowed, you should acquire legal firearms whenever you are able to and learn how to use them. If you have a firearm and if you pull your firearm out when somebody's coming to attack you, that can save your life. People should learn how to shoot and they should learn how to fight. But Dr. Dan, as I said in my interview with Pastor Manning, and we did a video on this, a lot of this is a message to the Jewish people. Get out of the galut. Get out of the exile and go to the land of Israel. That's a message for us. Rising anti-Semitism is a message. God mercifully is trying to push us out of the galut, out of the exile, and send us back to the land of Israel. Now Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, too, recall JDL and Kahanan, how they dealt with these beasts in the 70s and 80s, unquote. We dealt with them violently. We had patrols, and there still should be patrols in neighborhoods like Crown Heights and troublesome neighborhoods. We had patrols, and we used to deal with them violently. We used to beat people up who started this. And nowadays, I don't know what they would say if we did the same thing we did in those days. I don't know if there were charges with hate crimes. But we were actually, when we did this, we were only acting in self-defense. We never started with people for no reason. We never, never lifted a hand against anyone for no reason. We only defended ourselves and defended other people. If someone was under attack, we would defend them. And that should be done today. There should be civilian patrols. People should patrol troubled areas, and it should be very clear that whoever starts something like this is going to have a physical problem and a legal problem, both. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to Our great friend, I'm allergic to Islam, Schwarzes, and fags. Somebody help me. Who writes, and I quote, one, Nazi killer Joseph Paul Franklin was executed on Wednesday, unquote. Baruch Hashem, all the Nazis should be executed. Every Nazi should go to their natural place, which is a very, very warm place. And now I'm allergic to Islam rights, too. Director John Carpenter directed anti-Reagan film They Live, in which he depicts Republicans as alien creatures, and said he did this movie to give a finger to Reagan, unquote. Well, you know, these Hollywood animals, these film directors and these Hollywood animals are all so left-wing. You know, they're disgusting beasts, and they're destroying, of course they're destroying society and morals, and that's why we have to boycott them. Evil filmmakers and evil films and evil media should be boycotted. Thank you very much, I'm allergic, and now we go to our great friend, Secular Believer, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on the new knockout game? Does it make the case for gun rights stronger, unquote? Absolutely. Absolutely. As I was saying to Dr. Dan when he asked about this, people should be armed and they should train themselves in using weapons. And of course, people should have gun rights. This is why so-called gun control, attacks on the Second Amendment, are so disastrous, especially for Jews. Look how upside down these Jews are, these self-hating Jews in America are. Schmuck Schumer and all the self-hating Jews are the biggest proponents of anti-Second Amendment laws, of anti-gun laws. No one needs gun rights more than the Jews. The Jews need it more than anybody. No one needs the Second Amendment, and no one needs to be armed more than the Jews. No people has ever needed to be armed more than the Jewish people. And yet the Jews support politicians and leaders who do everything they can to take these rights away from us. Completely insane. Secular Believer, as I said again to Dr. Dan, I want to repeat it again though, I think that the ultimate answer is Aliyah. We shouldn't be here, we should be in Israel, and I know you have problems like this in Israel as well, but at least in Israel we're in our own homeland. That's where God wants us to be. But should we support the Second Amendment? 100%. Should we end all of these anti-gun laws? These anti-gun laws should be repealed. They are a catastrophe, especially for the Jewish people. Especially. Thank you, Secular Believer. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, how do you think Ted Cruz should combat the media and the Republican establishment in attempting to win the 2016 Republican nomination for president? Unquote. I actually think he's doing a good job right now. I think the interviews which we brought to you, we've done a lot of videos bringing you interviews from him. I think he speaks so well. And we're going to be, and God willing, we want to bring you many, many, many more. We're going to bring you a lot more videos of Ted Cruz doing interviews, debating, because he really is good. Let me tell you, JTFers, if Ted Cruz, God willing, gets the nomination, we're not going to have the same nightmare that we have with Romney and John McCain. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win. I don't know if America is going to nominate, is going to elect a president as conservative as Ted Cruz. I'm not sure. I don't know. But at least he's going to fight. He's a fighter. He fights. He's not like like John McCain and Mitt Romney who were praising Obama and slobbering all over Obama when they were running against him. I mean, we're not going to have that same disgusting situation. At least Ted Cruz attacks his evil opponents. I mean, he knows how to attack. So we're going to have a good time, at least in that respect. We're going to be proud of him. We would support him enthusiastically. We'd have someone that, for a change, we could finally support enthusiastically. Wouldn't that be a wonderful change? Wouldn't that be wouldn't that be wonderful for a change to have a candidate who's articulate, who makes us proud, whom we can salute, and who we can enthusiastically go all out for? Wouldn't that be wonderful for a change, instead of having the lesser of the evils all the time? That's what Ted Cruz would be. So we'll try. We'll try to get him the nomination. We're going to do everything we can to help. And we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. The one thing we have in our favor is he's a damn good speaker. He is a good speaker. He's a good speaker, a good debater. However, as you say, you're correct, the media and the Republican establishment hate him more than any other candidate. He's the one candidate they all hate. By the way, they asked Mitt Romney on one of these Sunday talk shows, who do you see for the Republican nomination in 2016? So he named everybody, Chris Christie and Scott Walker, the phony governor of Wisconsin, all the other phonies. He met Marco Rubio, all these phonies he went through. Every single one of them, by the way, Rand Paul, every single one of them supports, you know, supports amnesty, supports all the terrible things. And Mitt Romney listed all of them as potential, as good potential candidates for president. When he was asked, who do you think could be a good Republican candidate for president? He gave a list. He went through all of them. He said, oh, I think Chris Christie, and I think Scott Walker and Chris Christie and Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, and he went through all of them. The one person he didn't mention was Ted Cruz. So the reporters noticed that and said, what about Ted Cruz? Because Ted Cruz, according to the polls, Ted Cruz is certainly one of the leading candidates now. He is up there in the polls now, as far, among Republicans at least. So he said, what about Ted Cruz? And he would not include Ted Cruz. He said, I've given you already the list. I forgot exactly what he said, but he said something like, I've given you already the list of who I think is, you know, who I think is appropriate. I don't remember exactly how he said it, but he wouldn't put Ted Cruz in on the list. I mean, these establishment Republicans despise Ted Cruz because he's for real. We finally have someone who's for real. Oh, would I love to see him be elected. Oh, would I love. I would love to see that. Boy, would I love to see that. Thank you, EB. We're going to do it. And EB, you can't buy us. We're going to be loyal to him. We're going to support him. We're going to do everything we can to get him elected. Well, let's see what happens. Thank you, EB. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, why didn't Avishai Raviv go to jail, unquote. Okay, Avishai Raviv is the Shabak agent. Shabak is the FBI, really the KGB in Israel. He was the Shabak agent who went to Yigal Amir and said to him, be a man, be a man, kill Rabin already, kill him already, be a man. Why don't you kill him already? Come on, save the country. What are you, a coward? Come on. He kept pushing him publicly in front of dozens of times, in front of a lot of people, goading him on and on and on and inciting him. And he finally convinced Yigal Amir to do it. He even gave Yigal Amir the gun that was used to do the killing. Can you imagine if in this country, if Lee Harvey Oswald had been urged by an FBI agent dozens of times in front of hundreds of people to kill Kennedy, and if that FBI agent gave Lee Harvey Oswald the gun that was used to kill Kennedy, can you imagine what type of scandal that would cause? In Israel, that's what happened. In Israel, that is exactly what happened. Avishai Raviv did all of that with Yigal Amir, incited him and entrapped him into doing what he did, which is why Yigal Amir should be freed from prison. Yigal Amir does not belong in prison. When someone entraps you, if a government agent entraps you into doing something that you would not have done if not for the persuasive actions of that government agent, you're not guilty under the law. In any free country, and this is American law, by the way, this is American law as well, it's American law, it's Israeli law, in Israel, they don't enforce the law. They, you know, it's all a lie. But under the law, if someone entraps you, if a government agent entraps you, you're not guilty. Even if you committed the offense, if you were entrapped by a government agent, you're not guilty. What does that mean? That means, let's say you're a law-abiding citizen, and you have a government agent that convinces you to do something illegal. You didn't want to do it, but this person convinced you. And you do it, and you commit the illegal act, but because you were convinced by a government agent to do it. And you wouldn't have done it if not for the persuasion of this government agent. Under the law, you are not guilty. You've been entrapped. You are not guilty. You know why? Because the rulings of the courts are that government is not allowed to manufacture crime. You can't have persuasive, strong-willed, charismatic government agents going up to people, innocent people, and convincing people to do things that they would never have done before, convincing them to break the law. You can't have a situation like that. And so Avishai Raviv is guilty in the killing of Yitzhak Rabin, and Yigal Amir is not. Yigal Amir should be freed immediately, and Avishai Raviv is the one who should go to jail for the rest of his life. But nothing ever happened to him because in Israel there is no justice, not until we take power. And now Gematria says, and I quote, why did leftists yell srak srak during the shooting, unquote. Okay, srak srak means blank, blank. In other words, blank bullets. And it wasn't just leftists, it was the guards, Rabin's guards were shouting srak srak. In other words, blank, blank. Because he was shot twice, So they shouted blank, blank, because they expected the shooting to take place. They knew this was going to happen. But they thought that there would be blanks in the gun. Avishai Raviv gave Yigal Amir a gun with blanks and said, go kill Rabin with this gun. So the plan was, he was going to shoot Rabin with a gun with blanks. That was the plan of the Shabak. He's going to shoot the Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, with a gun that has blanks in it. They were going to grab him and arrest him and say, you see, look at this, look at these right-wing maniacs, they wanted to kill the Prime Minister. And they were going to say, you see, we stopped the terrible assassination. They didn't intend for Rabin to actually get killed. They intended to have a staged, attempted assassination, make an arrest, and show what heroes they are in saving the Prime Minister. That was their plan. What went wrong? Yigal Amir, when he got the gun with the blanks, as soon as Avishai Raviv went away, he checked the gun. He fired it to check it, and he saw there were only blanks in the gun, so he replaced the blanks with real bullets. That they didn't expect to happen. And so when Yigal Amir fired, they thought he was firing blanks at Rabin, but he was firing real bullets, and he really did kill Rabin during the shooting. So that's what went wrong. That just shows what happens when you try to entrap somebody, how things can go wrong. And now, Gematria writes, did Charles Kushner hire a prostitute for his brother-in-law? Unquote. Absolutely. Absolutely, that came out in court. There's no question about that. Charles Kushner wanted to hurt his brother-in-law, and so what he did is he paid a prostitute $10,000 to seduce and lure his brother-in-law to a motel. And the prostitute went there, and there was a hidden camera there that recorded what they were doing in the hotel room. And then Charles Kushner made sure that what was on the hidden camera was then delivered to his sister. So his sister was forced to watch her husband having sex with this prostitute. And Charles Kushner, her own brother, arranged the whole thing, arranged that her husband would do this and arranged the whole thing just to screw his brother-in-law, just to get his brother-in-law in trouble with his own sister. That's the type of scum this is. Oh, what low. And he's a billionaire. He's a Jewish billionaire. Imagine if Chaim ben Pesach were a Jewish billionaire. Can you imagine what I could do to make this, to help Israel and the Jewish people, to help Ted Cruz, to fight against evil in this world? Can you imagine all the things I could do? Ah! May the day come when we finally have the money that all these evil people have. And, you know, Hashem has his reasons. God has his reasons for why he does things. Maybe this generation doesn't deserve to see all that good happening. It's a punishment. Who knows what the reasons are? A test, a punishment. There are many possible reasons, but oh, if only I had what Charles Kushner had, what we could do to make this a better world. Thank you so much, Gematria. And now we go to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, when will the Democrat Party become openly anti-Israel and kick out phony so-called pro-Israel, quote-unquote, Democrats like Schumer, unquote? The Democrat Party is openly anti-Israel, Maimonides. They took the word Israel out of the Democrat platform in 2012. And then when Jews complained about it, and when it was on Fox and Republicans started making it an issue, they said, well, we have to put the word back in. So they put the word back in. When they mentioned the word on the floor of the convention, all the delegates booed the word Israel. Booed. And they voted against putting Israel back in the platform, but the party chair lied and said, no, there are more votes. You know, we did a video proving this. We showed that everybody was supporting keeping the word Israel out of the party platform because they're such Jew haters. They're such vicious anti-Semites in the Democrat Party. And it's a party filled with Muslims and black Jew haters and leftist scum and Jewish anti-Semites, self-hating Jewish anti-Semites. I mean, it's just a party of pure anti-Semitism from top to bottom. And by the way, Schumer is an anti-Semite. Schumer is an anti-Semite. Okay? Schmuck Schumer wants Israel to commit national suicide to go back to the pre-67 borders. They're only 6 to 10 miles wide. Schmuck Schumer supported Obama and Hillary Clinton and all the Jew haters that want Israel, they want to destroy Israel. So he's an anti-Semite too. And you're right that when you say he's a phony so-called pro-Israel Democrat, you know, he pretends But you have to be, you know, Jews have to be idiots to believe that he's really pro-Israel. He's anti-Israel. He wants his, going back to the pre-1967 borders is pro-Israel. Creating a so-called Palestinian state, which even the left used to say is certain suicide, that's pro-Israel? How could that be pro-Israel? The Democrat Party is openly anti-Israel right now. It's just the Jews don't want to recognize it. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, quote, "Does God control our destiny?" Unquote. Yes, he controls our destiny to the extent that he rewards us when we do good and punishes us when we do bad. But the reward and the punishment do not necessarily come in the immediate aftermath of our actions. Sometimes it could come in the next world. Eventually, there is justice and there is true reward for everything we do good and there's true punishment for everything we do bad. Eventually. But in order to give us free will, you don't see that right away. Because if you immediately rewarded somebody every time they did good and immediately punished somebody every time they did bad, everybody would do good. There'd be no more free will. People would be afraid. If the minute someone committed a sin, God came and smacked them in the back of the head, if that happened, nobody would commit sin anymore. There'd be no more free will. So God creates a world where there is seemingly no justice, and that enables us to have free will. But our destiny in the end is ultimately controlled by God to a certain extent, not completely. What do I mean by that? We control our own destiny. We control our own destiny in that we can choose to do good or we can choose to do evil. God doesn't make that choice for us. He allows us to do whatever, he allows us to make the choice that we wish. But we can choose to do good. And if we do good, God will reward us. And now LKZ writes, and I quote, "Why hasn't JTF succeeded?" Unquote. Well, you know, it's something we discuss every week. And I don't know if we haven't succeeded. Maybe our destiny is just to succeed and reach a certain number of people and that's it. Because maybe this generation isn't worthy of more than that. Who knows? But LKZ, we're paving the road for future success. Even if I don't live to see it, I hope you will. You're younger than me. I hope you'll live to see it, God willing. Even if I don't live to see the success in my lifetime, we're paving the road. If there are not people to stand out and warn and give the message and fight the good fight, even if that message is suppressed, and even if not many people hear it, and even if it... No matter what, there has to be somebody giving that message and continuing that message. There has to be a continuous link, generation after generation, with someone telling the truth at all times. There always has to be that. And if we do that, if we provide that service, and if we tell the truth, even if we don't convince the majority of people to follow us, eventually when it does happen, it'll be because we... We're one of the links, and we continue to fight the battle, and we continue to fight the battle no matter what the odds were. So, you know, the reason JTF hasn't become a mass movement and hasn't done everything that we really dream of doing, you know why? Because we don't have the budget that we need. That's the only reason, because we don't have the budget. If we had a big enough budget, we would succeed. Will we get a big enough budget? I don't know. I don't know. But I know that we have to keep trying no matter what. We're not allowed to stop. God will ask us, on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, God doesn't ask us, did you succeed? God asks you, did you do everything you could have done? Now LKZ writes, and I quote, "You have a message for Baalei Tshuva." Baalei Tshuva means people who return to Judaism, Jews who return to Judaism, who have fallen back, unquote. Yes, I do have a message, of course. They should return once again to Judaism. Hashem, God, is the ruler of the universe. To go against his will and go against what he commands us to do is crazy. Doesn't make any sense. As foolish as man is, and as important, as self-important as man thinks he is. In the end, God runs everything. We're so limited, we're so finite in this world. Our lives are so short. We should be doing what the Master of the Universe put us into this world to do. What God put us into this world to do. That's our purpose. That's the only life that's really worth living. And so, Balei Tshuva should once again return to the Torah way of life. And now LKZ writes, and I quote, Angola bans Islam. Thoughts, unquote? You know, I don't know. I saw the, I didn't have a chance to really look at the article. I saw the headline on the on the thread on the forum about Angola banning Islam. I have to look into it to see what it really is. If Angola genuinely is banning Islam, the only thing I can say is, wow, that would be very courageous and more power to them. And I hope it works. I would hope it will work out for them and set an example for everybody else. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, even though Cindy Shaheen is scum of the earth, though isn't it hilarious that leftists are calling her a racist for protesting Obongo's wars, unquote. Well, leftists are nuts. Leftists are completely nuts. You're not allowed to in any way criticize any black person, no matter what. You can't. Every black character in every movie on every television show is always wonderful. The blacks are always the best doctors, the best scientists, the best lawyers, the best researchers. I mean, you see black pharmacy drug commercials where the doctor is black and the researcher and the scientist is black. What, are you kidding me? In the real world, are you joking? Blacks are the researchers and the doctors and the scientists. What, are you joking? I wish on the animals that create those commercials that they should have heart disease and that the open heart surgery should be done by some affirmative action black. I wish that on them. But there's certain people who believe you can't say anything bad about blacks no matter what. We have to worship black people. We have to worship Obama. We have to worship black people. Look at the consequences. When we really... I mean, when you really give blacks control, we've seen how well it works out with Obamacare. I mean, you see when you give them control, eventually it leads to the collapse of society. We see what a great... I mean, look at the great success stories they've had in Africa. Do we want America to look like the Congo? Or Nigeria? Or Kenya? Or Zimbabwe? I mean, that's... And even those countries, anything they have in those countries, and they have very little, but anything they have in those countries is because white people went and built it for them. I mean, that's just the fact of life. And yet we're supposed to worship black people, pretend that they're the great scientists, they're the great leaders, they're the great doctors, they're the great philosophers. I mean, we're supposed to play this little game of pretending. It's an upside-down, crazy world. And so she, Cindy Sheehan, she criticizes anything Obama does, she's called a racist. You know? I mean, you're right, she is the scum of the earth. But they're all, the left, they're all insane. They're insane. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our great friend Mishma, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, who is Chaim Chazdai, unquote. That is my late uncle, Alav HaShalom. He was 20 years old, and he unfortunately died in a car accident. He was in a very tragic car accident when he was 20 years old. A car crashed into his car, and he was killed. This happened years before I was born, many years before I was born, so I never knew him. But he's my uncle, and he was very, very special. He was supposed to be a very special person, I'm told, and people in my family tell me what a wonderful person he was. Again, he only lived till 20, but they told me he was a great kid and a wonderful person, and they loved him very much. And so, you know, I do sometimes dedicate programs to elevating his soul. And now Mishmat writes, and I quote, also, may you please provide evidence to support your claim about Obama's poor grades. May Hashem bless you always, unquote. My evidence is simple deduction. How come he doesn't release his grades? He refuses, no matter what, to release his grades. And my evidence is also the fact that people who went to school with him hardly knew him. You go to people who were in his class in Columbia or in Harvard Law School. Almost nobody, nobody even knew him. He was hardly an impressive student. We know that he was a pot-smoking, lazy bum. Still a lazy bum as a president. Sits around playing golf and playing basketball all day and doesn't go to even regular cabinet meetings, doesn't go to intelligence briefings that all presidents used to go to before him. I guarantee you his grades were terrible. And that's why he will not, under any circumstances, release his records. I'm telling you, his records were terrible. Because it would explode the myth of, oh, he's so brilliant, he's so talented, he's such a genius. It's like all the other lies we've been told about black people and about affirmative action people for decades now. Thank you, Mishmat. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, do you think the USA can still recover from the Obama years, unquote? Only if they elect a pro-Israel president. That's the first qualification. They've got to elect a president who is pro-Israel so that Hashem will not destroy this country. Because if you go against Israel, that's the end of the country. Hashem will see to it that America goes down. Right now, America's doing everything they can to hurt Israel because of Obama being an anti-Semite and being a Muslim. And so America right now is on the path to self-destruction. But if we elected a pro-Israel president in the United States, like Ted Cruz, that is the one thing that could turn the situation around. And of course, he would also, through natural means, not just the God intervening because the country's pro-Israel, but through natural means, his policies on other issues, like the budget and taxes and the economy and health care, his policies on other issues are also good policies. So that would be the one hope to save America. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And we go to Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, and Ephraim being, as of course, a great JTFer, and Ephraim writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you think we are getting to a point where a physical American revolution is the only answer? Please talk about the Maccabees, unquote. No, I don't think that there has to be a physical American revolution. I think that we can have an electoral revolution at the polls if enough people support Ted Cruz. I think we could have an electoral revolution. I don't think we're right now a country that's willing to engage in a physical revolution. I don't think the American people are willing to do that. You know, when people are not starving, they're usually not willing to risk their lives in a revolution against their government. So I don't believe it's going to happen right now, unless there's a complete collapse in the economy and everything just completely collapses, which with Obama and these other leaders eventually is possible. But unless that happens, I don't see it. But I do think I think America can be saved at the polls if we just had a president who would turn things around and inspire the country to do what the country was always meant to do. I think it's still possible. And you asked me to speak about the Maccabees. The Maccabees were the great Jewish freedom fighters who refused to accept idolatrous Greek rule, Greek-Assyrian rule. It's actually the Greek-Assyrians. They were followers of the Greek culture, but they weren't from Greece. The Greek-Assyrians were ruling over the land of Israel. And they convinced most of the Jews to be self-hating Jews. And the Maccabees rebelled against the self-hating Jews and rebelled against the Greeks, the Greek-Assyrians, and defeated them against all odds, heavily, heavily outnumbered, defeated them. They also killed Jewish traitors. They killed self-hating Jewish traitors. That was really the beginning of their revolt. It's quite a story, the story of the Maccabees. I'm going to be releasing a Hebrew video on it pretty soon that I actually did a while ago. The story of Chanukah, of the Maccabees in Chanukah, is actually a militant story, a story of real Jewish militancy against evil, self-hating Jews. And it's a story that really makes me wonder why self-hating Jews today celebrate Chanukah. Because if anything, Chanukah is a story that condemns the self-hating Jews and the Jewish traitors and actually encourages Jews to be zealots, to be zealous promoters of Judaism. Thank you so much, Ephraim. And I want to thank everybody for another show that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.